This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 513 for Tuesday, September 5th, 2017. I'm Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry. And we have a conversation each and every week. And in order to have a conversation, we need two people. And that other person, my right hand, left hand, and basically the brains behind this operation, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin. Happy to be joining you, and thanks for those kind words. I hopefully brought my brain today. We'll see.
You had a special weekend, like a maiden voyage kind of a weekend.
We did. I talked about it last week on the show, and we are motorhome owners now. It's not any motorhome. It's a 21-year-old motorhome that we had never really taken camping before.
It's got some character, is what you're saying.
That's right. It has a lot of character. Its name is Mary D, and we took Mary D, the RV, to the local state campground and had a fabulous weekend. And so off to a good start.
Awesome. And you'll have to tell us all about it, all your adventures now as you kind of venture out on Mary D. Is her name on the side of the vehicle?
Not yet, but that's on the list of things to do. So put that vinyl cutter to use eventually. So
awesome. Very good. Very happy for you. That sounds like a lot of fun. Did you have some good weather for it?
We did have good weather. And, you know, as if the start of school signaled it or whatever, today is a very cool day in Minnesota. Sent the kids back to school in jackets and such. We've got sunshine and highs in the low 60s. So maybe not the beginning of fall yet. We'll wait a few weeks for that, but it sure does feel like it here in New Ulm.
So we've got as well. But that comes with the territory.
Yes, it does.
All right. Speaking of changing weather and seasons, we have a new season for Wells Tech. And we finished our summer season where we kind of did a lighter version of the show where we focused primarily around a ministry resource. We did a few picks yet here and there, that kind of thing. But now we're kind of back in full swing, and we've cooked up some monthly themes, right?
That's right, Martin. We're going to kick off this month with the theme of looking at meetings. And then each month of the season, we expect to focus on one theme throughout the month and bring you interviews and kind of really dive deep into a particular theme. So meetings are up first, and we thought it was a good idea to start with what we've said about meetings in the past, because we have dedicated some time to thinking about meetings, particularly in our co-written book that we produced a few years ago now, believe it or not, and thought it was worth revisiting. It's called With All Your Heart. I have my copy right here. And we also have a copy online that you can read as well. And we're looking today at chapter 4 of With All Your Heart, which focused on meetings.
So some would ask, well, what does meetings have to do with technology? And I guess I would say that there is a lot of technology that has kind of emerged on the scene over the last 10, 15 years that have made meetings maybe more manageable, maybe more productive. And maybe the first thing we should say about meetings right off the bat is a lot of people would say, well, meetings are bad. Do everything that you can to avoid meetings. That's not necessarily the case. We make that point in the book that, you know, not all meetings are bad. In fact, it's in order to run a project, you have to have meetings. In fact, for the projects we run here in the Synod office, we have meetings every single day on every project. Now, they're not long meetings, so hopefully they're productive meetings, but we'd have a hard time without meetings, and we'd have a hard time without technology.
Yeah, and I think just like you said, if we were meeting daily on our projects and we weren't using technology, they probably wouldn't be very productive meetings. So the fact that technology assists us with that has kind of moved us to a new level of getting things done, I guess is how we want to say it. And we can see that same kind of productivity should have a place, not just could, but should have a place in churches and schools. I can't tell you how many times I've sat down at the monthly meeting, whatever it is. Maybe it's an outreach committee meeting, or it's the ladies' aid, or whatever it is. And we spend half the meeting time trying to remember what we did the last time we met. And that's just not productive use of time at all.
Right. So we'll just do a quick, I think, kind of run through what's in the book. People can obviously read for themselves, but some of the category or section titles are probably helpful here. And one of the things that we start with is talking about conflict, right? So we've got people in meetings, and when people are together, there's going to be conflict. And that's not always a bad thing. And that's something to remember, that you sometimes want to create conflict, because conflict produces ideas, and differing ideas and challenging ideas. If there were no conflict, there might be only just a single path toward a project objective. And that's not what meetings are about. Meetings are about kind of consensus gathering, finding the best way forward, hearing everybody's voice, and ultimately picking the best direction to go. And conflict is necessary. So there's an art and a science to kind of creating tension, creating conflict, and helping people, you know, those that are maybe reticent to come out of their shells, help them to come out of their shells. Those people that maybe dominate can be challenged in obviously an evangelical way. So conflict is good, can be good.
Can be good. And I think setting the stage for that and letting people know that this is meant to be a brainstorming session or whatever, and we want to hear everyone's ideas. So paying attention to the environment in which you're meeting is another point that we make in the book. Reinforcing that we're all Christian brothers and sisters and want to get to the same end result of having great quality and the outreach efforts that we do across the board, and making it an enjoyable experience for folks as they sit down to meet together.
Next, go ahead, Sally.
Well, I was just going to say, next up, maybe we could jump to meeting preparation, because I think having a good environment, setting the stage that conflict is okay and we're going to explore things and we're going to dig deep is great, but there's also work that needs to be done on the part of someone who's starting or heading up the meeting, so that you come to the meeting ready to get things done. And perhaps that involves not just the person setting up the meeting, but those involved as well. And one little thing that we did with the book was we interviewed people along the way. And maybe just a quick mention that the person we interviewed on meetings was Pastor Rob Gunther up at Grace in Kenai, Alaska. And Rob was really great to explain a meeting technique he has that has the whole crux of the meeting technique is on preparation. Everybody goes to a single Google Doc and puts in their reports for their council meetings. And so it's an expectation of everyone on the council that they do those kind of things. And then everyone's had a chance to read everyone else's reports. And so the meeting gets off, 20 yards down the field, much further than it would have been if everyone started with, let's all read each other's reports, the traditional meeting method.
Sally, I think one of the things that I've observed over the years in church meetings, school meetings, the single biggest productivity failure in those meetings has been that preparation, the ability of the people at the meeting to kind of jump right in, hit the ground running, versus the typical meeting where they're coming unprepared, they haven't looked at the agenda, they haven't thought through the questions, they haven't kind of come to the meeting ready to kind of dive at a deeper level. They spend most of the meeting just getting up to speed. So I think there is a challenge in doing that. And that's what's great about the suggestions that and the approach that Rob is taking there for their church, is that it's an expectation, that your meeting members, your team members, your project team members are already invested before they show up for the meeting. And that obviously would make a much more productive meeting and potentially even a shorter meeting.
Definitely a positive. I can speak from the Treasure House board experience that we try to keep our meetings to 1 hour. I think Rob said in the interview we did with him that their council meetings used to be 2 to 3 hours and they'd gotten down to about an hour and a half, which is really great. We try to keep our board meetings to 1 hour, and I can just see the time ticking away as the chairperson, and we haven't addressed half the agenda yet, and we only have 15 minutes left or something like that, you know. So just time is very valuable for everyone. People are willing to come and meet with you. You want to make the best use of that, for sure.
One challenge, of course, with that approach is it does require people invested or at least comfortable with technology to kind of get in and, you know, be comfortable with Google Docs or whatever the technology is that you're gathering this information on. Or you're going to have to invest some time bringing their stuff into the, you know, the tool, whatever it is, OneNote or Google Docs or Microsoft Word or whatever.
Yeah, we actually asked this question of our Wells Tech community this week in preparation for this show. And Pastor Gunther wrote and said, you know, I thought it would be difficult to get some people into this mode, but everyone just jumped right in and did it. Contrast that to Pastor Steve Daly, who wrote to us and said, I'm a little concerned. We've got some people that aren't real tech savvy that were just elected right to the council. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. Maybe I'll have to paste their reports in for them rather than
like them said, doing he used it to have more technically savvy members on the council or whatever committee was talking about. And now, you know, they've transitioned, although dedicated people coming in, very mm-hmm. passionate about ministry, they just don't have that skill set. So maybe that's another conversation to have. How do you integrate and maybe even train or get people, you know, on the same page with the technology too?
Yeah, train's already out of the station, so they got to jump on board, don't they?
Speaking of that question we asked, how do you prepare for meetings, and got some great responses. That speaks really to the last topic, short of technology, of course, which we're not going to spend a lot of time on in this particular meeting. We want to dedicate more of a show to that, but the agenda piece of meetings. The agenda is critical in the flow and what the expectations are. And when we asked, how do you prepare for meetings, a couple people responded, including Rob Gunther, of course, but we heard from Steve Lockwood and Paul Nitz talking about this level 10 meeting concept. And they shared a YouTube video, and Paul even had Pastor Paul Nitz from Africa even shared a little personal video of how he organizes it. But it's a real interesting concept. And it comes from, actually, I can do a quick screen share. It comes from a book that we have used in the past. In fact, it is called, let me just find it again. It is called Traction. This is a book that I was introduced to down at a multi-language publications meeting down in El Paso, Texas, where this concept of, this is written by Gino Wickman, who is kind of an entrepreneur, and he wrote it for entrepreneurs, but I know our missions team and our MLP team have kind of adopted this, and that's, I'm sure, where Paul Nitz came across it. But this concept of level 10, and we'll probably devote more time to this maybe in a subsequent week, but it's a concept where obviously people come prepared, but there's a nice flow and structure to it where people have this sameness. They understand what to expect. There's some upsides. There's, you know, some positive conversation. There's some problem solving. There's some reporting. Everybody kind of is on the same page, and really it is kind of a nice formula to keep a meeting, in this case, a weekly meeting at 90 minutes, this level 10 meeting. I think we'll enjoy spending a little bit of time, and maybe we'll talk about it later in the month. We have Larry Schlomer lined up to do an interview with us, and I know he uses this kind of meeting too, where we can dive in a little bit more and see what this is all about.
Just if you've never heard of it, the concept level 10 comes from the fact that most people would rate meetings at a 5, 6, or 7, and they tried to study what would take
or less.
What would take the meeting to a level 10, where people came out of the meeting saying it wasn't a very effective meeting. So that's where
that's an interesting part of this meeting paradigm, where you actually rate the meeting before you end the meeting. So every participant is asked to rate the experience, and then collaboratively they You know, they self-assess and then commit to making it better. So it's a very interesting concept.
Yeah, definitely worth diving deeper. We should make mention of a few tools that were in our book chapter, and one of them is a favorite of mine. It actually has to do with preparation. One of the hardest things to do, similar to herding cats, I've heard, is trying to find a good meeting time for everyone you need to have involved. And I use a tool called Doodle, which makes that super simple. And the concept of Doodle is you go to a website, you put in a lot of different suggested meeting times that would work with your schedule, and then you invite the people who are part of the meeting to indicate which times work for their schedule. And hopefully through that process, one time will or more will fall out that works for most people, if not everyone. And so Doodle manages all of that, gives you a good web interface for it, and it's totally free to use. So really solves a problem with coming up with meeting times.
Right. There are a number of other technologies that we reference in the book, and we'll go into more detail on some of these later on in the month when we kind of a technology focus show. But just a couple of them to whet your appetite. Google Docs we talk about, obviously, for that paperless approach. Rob Gunther mentioned that in his response. There are a bunch of reminder tools. We've talked about Follow Up Then, which is an easy way to just use email to kind of push emails out of your face and back into your face when you want to see them. So show it to me, tomorrow or next week or next month. Other reminder tools like Todoist, Remember the Milk, Wunderlist, AnyDo are all kind of task management tools that help you kind of keep things on track, especially for project work where you're trying to make sure that things don't fall through the cracks. So whether that's a reminder to follow up with somebody or a reminder to do something or take an action item, etc. And then my favorite tool is OneNote, just kind of a jack of all trade tool that I really couldn't live without. The ability to capture stuff, the ability to share stuff, not just when I say stuff, I really mean everything. There is not anything that I found that I couldn't put in a OneNote, an image, an audio file, a video file, action items. The list goes on and on about what you can capture in OneNote and organize it any way you want. So we'll come back and talk about that a little bit more for meeting management in a subsequent episode.
And just to mention, OneNote is probably most comparable to a Google Doc, but just so much more capable, and it is cloud-based, so you can collaborate, and everyone can have access to the most recent copy via links to where it lives in the cloud.
Exactly. So I think maybe we've done enough on our inaugural session on meetings. Again, we're going to have some interviews coming up this month and some other book review we're going to do. There's just all kinds of good stuff that we have on meetings coming up this month. September is meetings month, and that's probably true also in your organization where you're just kind of getting back in the swing of things, especially for your school, but also church too. After maybe a slower summer, now you're trying to get things, your ministries back in gear, and September is the start of meeting season.
Martin, I don't know about your calendar, but I think I'll plan to meet you here next Tuesday to talk about meetings, 1 p.m. Central Time.
We'll do it, yes.
All right.
So I've got to get back in the swing of things. We introduce or reintroduce some familiar segments. And the next segment on my list is News in Tech.
News in Tech. And we want to mention that our artificial intelligence devices are beginning to talk to each other.
Scary. Yes.
Yeah. Out of Amazon, actually, that Amazon's Alexa and Microsoft's Cortana are going to be able to engage with each other. So interesting article from the New York Times. We'll include a link in the show notes to that, talking about how this all kind of came about when the Amazon guy, Jeff Bezos, was at a Microsoft conference, I believe, and suggested it to their lead guy. And I'm going to fumble his name, Satya Nadella. from Microsoft, and they agreed to do this, have been working on it for over a year, and now they can actually talk to one another. And they gave the example of the Microsoft Cortana being a lot better at working with Outlook, because Outlook is a Microsoft product. So Amazon might say, open Cortana and tell it to look for something on the calendar or whatever that's stored in Outlook. Pretty neat.
That's an interesting thing to me, because a lot of my life is in Microsoft since we're Outlook users. So my calendar's all there, emails, those kinds of things. And I do have a Alexa device at home. I find that very useful for home automation and just kind of quick questions. I would imagine Cortana added to that would increase its knowledge base, which is always helpful. So do you have any of these virtual assistants, Sally, that you use?
Nothing but Siri on my iPhone. That's about as deep as I've gotten. I haven't gotten
into the devices. You think she's a virtual assistant? Does she do much assisting for you?
She does occasionally when I'm looking for something.
She and typically I aren't really in speaking terms. Yeah, it's really kind of a love-hate relationship. I mean, she'll tell me the time and the weather pretty consistently, but I get much beyond that, and she's not doing much assisting.
Yeah, we usually get into these conversations at the dinner table and eventually get to the point where it says we could just Google this. And that's when I ask Siri. So
is Google, Kevin would have a Google Assistant, right?
On his phone. That's true. Yeah. That's true.
And I think I've had a much better time with the Google Assistant, but we'll see how this all comes together.
I thought there was something interesting, kind of read between the lines in the article, where they described this marriage between Amazon and Microsoft, and these two bigwigs agreed to kind of pursue it. Then Amazon went back and they said it's their internal process to write a press release as if the thing is done and they're ready to present it to the world. And then they take that press release of what they'd like to be able to present, and they work backwards. They do those press releases before one line of code is ever written. And I thought that was just kind of a good lesson for all of us, that we can get a vision of something. If it's a vacation Bible school process or program or whatever it may be, kind of think about what it is that we want to present as the final outcome and work backward from there to make it happen.
Desired outcome. That we have that in the book that we
do. I need to read that book again, I think.
Yeah, good stuff in here.
Yes, definitely.
All right. So some interesting news in tech. Let's move on to some more news, and that's in Wells. We call this section or segment Wells Now.
Yep. And for Wells Now, we just want to make mention that we do have efforts to support the relief and ongoing cleanup and that kind of thing from Hurricane Harvey, which has hit the Houston, Texas area super hard in the last week and a half. And so what we have online now is a form that you can use for volunteering. And if you're underage, you can also use the parental consent form. They will be looking for volunteers. Wells doesn't do immediate relief, but first response kind of relief, but more after the fact with all the cleanup efforts and financial obligations that people have in relation to it. I know that there are several Wells churches down in the area that District President Patterson in the South Central District has organized and taken down some relief materials from Christian Aid and Relief, and more will be coming. And there's also a link that we can provide in the show notes to where you can donate online as well. So if you're interested in helping with the Hurricane Harvey relief efforts, please do check out the links on wells.net.
Awesome. So all kinds of ways, donations, your time, et cetera. So wells.net's the place to go for that. And our prayers are certainly with all those down there fighting the results of Hurricane Harvey.
Definitely.
We're back to familiar territory, Sally, and that is our segment called The Picks of the Week. And it's always ladies first on Wells Tech.
Always ladies first. How kind of you. I am doing a pick of the week from a favorite website called Make Use Of, something we've talked about regularly on the show. Make Use Of has some great articles about all different types of tech. And most recently, I picked up on an article called The Best PowerPoint Templates for Educational Presentations. Nice. Raise your hand if you're a teacher in the audience and you use PowerPoint ever in your classroom. I think many of them do. And many of these templates and things, which they feature on this article, are available just directly from the Microsoft template library. So many of them are free, if not from there, from other sources as well, and certainly appropriate for academics. So if you're looking for something new, to even to freshen up an existing presentation with a new look and feel, you may want to check these out. They have ones with anatomy, they have math-oriented presentation templates, some that look like dictionaries, physics-oriented, you name it. They've got education-based templates to fit your needs. So check them out.
Fun. And that's just one box you can check off to say, I don't have to spend a lot of time designing my own. I think there's value in not recreating the wheel in this particular area. Just all kinds of stuff that others, thousands of other teachers have created here. This is cool. So
definitely.
And in a format that's pretty portable, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Good find, Sally. My pick is something related to last week's pick, or maybe the week before, something like that. And I've been immersed lately in Camtasia and the TechSmith suite of products. Camtasia, if you're not familiar, is a screencast recording software and creation tool. And I've got a couple of resources here I'd like to share with anybody who out there who is using Camtasia. If you flip your classroom, this is really a must. I've been teaching Erie Lutheran High School online course, which is totally distance learning. So I've got 15 kids that I'm teaching from now through December. And so each week I'm creating two or three screencasts. And these tools that that Camtasia brings to the table are just awesome. One of them is just the built-in TechSmith library that they bring to the table. And that includes these intro animations. You have all kinds of options for just these animated backgrounds, and what you can do is just install these, drag them into your project, and then they have kind of built-in text elements that animate in, and they're just kind of cool things to introduce your presentations. There's just regular backgrounds that you can use and put your own text over them. There's different icon sets that you can use if you're creating presentations and want some kind of theme to them. There's lower thirds that you can put over your video. So if you've got some kind of presentation or talking headpiece, there's also music here, all kinds of royalty-free music that you can add. And for many of these, I don't think you even need to have Camtasia installed, but it these work really seamlessly with Camtasia. And then a series of webcasts that were available last week, but the good news is that these were recorded and made available to anybody for free. They're all about an hour long. They're from a company called, I'm going to forget their name. Sponsored by TechSmith, but it's a company called, I'll come up with it later, but they basically got kind of best in breed presenters and brought them together for three different webcasts. One of them called Cooking Up E-Learning Demos in Minutes with TechSmith Camtasia. These are all Camtasia focused. One of them called How to Make Great Video Software Demonstrations. And another one called Mining Content, Encouraging Video Production Without Overwhelming Your Experts. I was able to watch a couple of these, just nicely presented, really concise, really helps you through the kind of the key points in each of their area of expertise, and well worth you spending a couple hours just picking through these and watching them either demonstrate or talk through key concepts for recording good screencasts and everything that goes into them, and then the production side of it as well. So those are my picks of the week.
Wow, that's really excellent, Martin. I didn't get to watch any of those, so I'm looking forward to watching the archives. But, you know, the more we think of it, video is such a powerful communication tool to make use of for church and school. And so I think the more we can learn about it, different tools and tricks that we can add to our arsenal is all a win-win for folks. So good, absolutely, good picks.
All right. Now a segment that we spent a lot of time on over the summer, we haven't forgotten about and will include in each of our shows going forward and still have the appropriate focus on it. It's all about ministry. And that's why we decided that ministry resources are an important segment of the show. And we'll continue to kind of trade off. And Sally is up this week with her ministry resource. What did you come up with, Sally?
Well, actually, this wasn't me. It was the folks over at code.org that came up with my topic.
The best kind of ministry resource.
I just shared it with folks. They have a brand new computer science fundamentals course for grades K through 5. And you think, wow, K through 5, do we really need to be teaching them computer science? And the answer is yes. Just like language skills and math skills, critical thinking that comes through computer science skills is going to benefit students all the way up. And I think introducing students and getting over the barrier of it being something that they couldn't possibly do into being something they can totally do is going to just encourage more and more to consider computer science careers and that kind of thing. So again, CS Fundamentals, and it has five different levels, courses A through F, that basically correspond to the different grade levels. They also have some express courses, they call it, that kind of cover all the things in some of the others.
So it goes kindergarten to fifth grade.
That's correct, kindergarten through fifth. And they have a description of each one of them with lesson plans and course links and then a description of the express course as well. And very well done, but I really like the emphasis that they placed on a couple of different components of the course. First of all, they have a 350-page downloadable PDF with all of the lesson plans, everything organized very well for you, and very high quality materials, very, very well done. But one of the main emphases, and I'm just going to kind of scoot down this document a ways, is something they call unplugged activities, where you don't have to have a computer or anything to learn the concepts. So this one, for instance, is called Stevie and the Big Projects, where students run into a barrier while answering a question and working through it. This lesson will introduce students to the idea that frustration can be an important part of learning. Sounds like conflict being an important part of meetings. Yep. Here, frustration is presented as a step in the creative process rather than a sign of failure. So they have a warm-up exercise. You build a marble run. During the exercise, the students are encouraged to journal at the end, and it's all detailed there for you with steps for debugging and setup and all kinds of printable resources and things. And this is just one example of the many, many unplugged resources that are part of this curriculum, where they're showing different ideas on how to build the marble run and things. So very well thought out, very well done, and gets the kids out of their chairs and doing some hands-on type activities. The other component of this that I highlight in the article is the fact that they have an extensive workshop arrangement where you can come, if you're a K through 5 teacher, to a free full day online in-person workshop. And they have these scattered all across the United States. But for those who can't make it to that, they also have a link available for self-paced course online. And this is not just here's where the lesson plans are and here's what the students will be doing. They actually introduce you to computer science fundamentals, and they show you the lessons that the students will be learning, but it's more of a peek into the lessons where you can actually do one or two of the lessons that the students will be doing and understand how it works. And sometimes there's Angry Birds and pigs involved. And
the Angry Birds franchise. Interesting.
Yeah. And so, but you're not having to work all the way through everything they're doing. Instead, they're explaining what they're doing and giving you some hands-on so that you have this comfort level. If you've never done tech before or whatever it may be, you can go through and have a comfort level of what the students are doing and be able to guide and direct them without having to do every single piece of the course that they'll be doing. And it covers sequencing, loops, conditional statements, functions, events. And then at the end, they give you lessons on best practices for teaching. And there's videos all throughout this. It kind of just walks you through very well done, high quality resources on how to teach. And they also have it linked to a forum where you can go and ask questions and just really put a lot of thought into rolling out this computer science curriculum, not just the fact that they're offering a new curriculum and here it is handed to the students, but how our teachers can get a comfort level and roll it out effectively. So great resources there. I hope you check out the article and some of the links that are included.
Code.org is just an amazing place. I think they have spent a lot of time, and a lot of talented people have, I think, contributed to its success. So this is just an example of that.
Definitely.
Very cool. We have a community feedback section, Sally.
We do. Let's see if I can jump to that. And we were excited to learn about the Helpful Mom and her resources over on Teachers Pay Teachers. So if you aren't familiar with the site Teachers Pay Teachers, it's a platform where people that have developed great lesson type resources can share those, and you can download those and access those. Many of them are free, many of them are for a fee. And this one in particular caught our attention because it's based around the Lutheran Reformation. And so the Helpful Mom shop out there has developed a really great set of resources for kindergarten through fifth grade. They actually have it kind of in, broken into three levels, but you could buy the whole package and get all the activity pages for kindergarten through fifth grade with this bundle, or you can go and buy the individual sections. I actually downloaded a freebie that shows a few of the resources, and they've got all kinds. There's 135 pages in the full bundled group, and here's some about before and after, the letter before E, the letter after L, and ultimately the letters that are circled spell part of what Martin Luther said, defending his actions to the emperor. And it'll kind of fill in the blanks. And then you get a teacher version where, which shows what letters should have been circled. And that's just one example. There's multiple choice type things. There's map activities, all kinds of things at all different levels for the students to explore, secret codes. And it's all around this Reformation theme. And here's some really great news. I was here last week and the price for the bundle was $9.99. But as of today, it's on sale for $7.20. So if you're looking for some supplemental materials, K through 5 level, on the Lutheran Reformation. I can vouch for this person. It's a Wells person that developed it, the Helpful Mom. And we think these resources are top notch. So check it out.
Nice. It's awesome that this Teachers Pay Teachers site exists. It's very easy to get stuff on there like this. And awesome. It looks like very professionally done. Worksheets, and I'm very impressed. Very impressed.
Just in time for that 500th anniversary celebration.
Yep. You're all about the K to 5 resources today. Just
I
kind
am.
Of a wealth of those resources. I have just one ministry resource to share, and that I tweeted the other day, and let me see if I can actually find it again. It was a resource.
There's a link in the show notes. I have it up actually.
No, here it is. I got it. Sorry about the delay. Basically, it's from the ministrytech.com website, and it's entitled, it's a blog post from late August here, Why Texting is as Important as Social Media. I mean, we give a lot of love to social media these days. We have books written about it, whatever. But I think maybe even a more used feature, and one of the points of this article, maybe more useful features for ministry purposes is texting. So it talks about millennials and their use of their phones and the importance of having text messaging in whatever form that is. I guess there's, you know, a lot of different flavors of that, but I think there's some great tips here about how to use that technology in not just in youth ministry, but I think across the board in lots of different ministry contexts. So it's a short article. It should not take you long to read. They are, they, by the way, just kind of full disclosure, they have a texting service for churches, which they're not the only ones that have that, that gives you the ability to send out multiple texts at once. So, you know, they're self-interested a little bit here, Ministry Tech, the Ministry Tech folks are, but there are some great points that they make here. So take a look at that blog post.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing.
That's it for community feedback. Just a reminder that if you want to contribute to the show, we would love it if you would. Just go to wellstech.wells.net and you can leave a comment on the show notes page there. You can find all of our social presences, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Digo, Instagram, all those are different places that we frequent, and we will capture your comments if you make them there. Just usually it's like a hashtag WellsTech or something like that. Or just send us an email, wellstech@wells.net, with the, could be a resource, could be a thought for a future show, a comment on something that we've shared. Lots of different ways to connect with us and contribute to the show. We'd love it if you'd join the conversation. Sally, we still have a featured video, and this is an oldie but a goodie.
We do. It's from our friend, Pastor Rob Gunther. I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we interviewed him probably about 2 years ago now, as we were writing chapter 4 on meetings in the With All Your Heart book. And so we wanted to go back and reference that interview. He actually kind of documented online a lot of his best practices for excellent meetings on a site called The Faster Pastor. So you'll want to hear Rob talk about that and kind of revisit some of those techniques related to meetings.
Very good. That is going to about wrap it for this show. We'll be doing a show 514 before you know it. And again, we're going to be focusing on meetings. Sally, what do we have planned?
Looking forward to talking about strategic planning. And I've been a part of a couple of strategic planning efforts at our church and for the Treasure House Board. And one of the people here in New Ulm who's helped tremendously with that is the former president of the congregation at St. Paul's New Ulm, Brian Fisher. So we're hoping to talk with Brian about how to do strategic planning the best way. And I guess that's something we can throw out to our audience today, Martin, is our question of the week is how do you engage members and school parents and strategic planning for your church or school? We'd love to hear what folks have to say as we plan for next week's show on strategic planning.
Yep. Strategic planning should not just be a leadership exercise. It needs to obviously involve anybody that would have an interest in it, all the stakeholders. And that means kind of everybody engaged with your organization. So we'd love it if you would tell us how you reach out to those folks and engage them in your strategic planning processes.
Very special meeting or series of meetings that the folks should be having. So
very good. Thank you, everybody, for joining show 513. Sally, I think it's time to say goodbye.
Time to say goodbye. See you next week, folks.
Bye-bye.